Dear ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the publication of the preliminary figures 2020 of SFC Energy AG. At our customer's request, this conference will be recorded. As a reminder, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. If any participant has difficulties hearing the conference, please press star key followed by zero on your telephone for operator assistance. May I now hand you over to Peter Podesser, CEO, who will lead you through this conference. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Angela, for the introduction. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, from a, obviously, chilly but sunny morning here in Munich. We had, whatever, minus 13 degrees C, which is a good start into a winter day. Daniel Saxena and myself, we will be happy to lead you through the call today. We are conducting the call from different physical locations according to our COVID protocol in place. Well, thank you for taking the time and joining us today. We are going to report on three main items. First of all, and as usual for this time of the year, we are pleased to present the preliminary consolidated figures. As you all know, as we all know, non-audited yet, and therefore naturally not in every detail. With a review on a challenging environment in the past year, and a look into the individual performance of our different parts of the business. The second part, and this is also why you found an ad hoc announcement this morning also from SFC Energy, we are today reinstating our guidance for the year 2021, despite still an environment that is, well, despite an environment that still is characterized by naturally the impact of the pandemic situation, we feel confident enough and we have enough visibility for our judgment from today's point of view to give a proper guidance and reinstate the market outlook for 2021 today. And the third part of the presentation is an assessment of the overall larger grand picture. Hydrogen and fuel cells have seen an enormous interest and a very dynamic environment has unfolded over the last 12 to 18 months. And we have taken the time in the last 6 months to revise our positioning and planning for a five-year period, and we will be happy to share this in more details with you. Sharing the presentation and naturally the Q&A session, I would start off with some of the highlights of the past year. Daniel giving you an insight into the current set of numbers, myself going into the segments and then into the outlook and the midterm considerations. And then naturally we will be happy to get your comments and questions. Well, summarizing 2020, I think it's, well, no secret for all of us that COVID has impacted not only all our lives, but also the business life. But as already published back in November with our nine-month figures, we could expect, and we also now see the proof of it, we could expect significant upturn in the last quarter of 2020 with a strong Q4 here with about 14 million of revenue, which is, let's say, slightly below the previous year's fourth quarter, but this was prior to COVID. So we feel overall a pretty solid business performance in, well, a highly challenging economic environment. we see different impact on the business, continuing a picture that we already laid out to all of you in November with the 9-month results, a continuously, strong and dominant impact here by our civilian fuel cell business. Regionally broad and unprecedented momentum in the demand for methanol as well as hydrogen fuel cells for industrial and consumer applications. Key element. We don't want and we don't have to hide the negative impact of the corona situation on our defense and security business here, with significant delays in the international business and also the impact on our power electronics business as well as oil and gas, whereas I think the latter one was the positive surprise in Q4 with a strong and solid rebound here since August timeframe. Summarizing the year 2020 in some of the key achievements or highlights, I think the market entry into the hydrogen fuel cell business, definitely a milestone for us. The digital government radio program called BossNet is unfolding faster than expected. We, together with our partner Adcore, we are consistently delivering and installing products in the field, so that we can say from our original planning to the result then in 2020, significant acceleration and faster than expected, with, let's say, more than 250 units installed in the field. Regional expansion of the business, second element. Very happy. Back in November, we reported here together with our partner Toyota Tsusho that after a successful, business development period here for of a couple of years, we agreed on an exclusive distribution and exclusive cooperation agreement for hydrogen and methanol fuel cells covering the range here below 100 kilowatts for the Toyota Tsusho organization. And, it was also already at that time clearly formulated, and we are working on this as we speak to assess here the next steps and prepare the next steps to join forces in other parts of Asia, I would say, soon. Although defense and security definitely delivered the most disappointing numbers last year, I think it is important to see that we worked further on the OEM our partnership side, joining forces here with Yen Optics, their mechatronics arm, Vincorion, and us offering off-grid, low-impact, silent, zero-emission systems here for defense and security users. On the consumer front, in our consumer business, I think that the collaboration with ePropulsion, one of the leading manufacturers of electric boat engines, again shows this sustainability track, a change in the environment, replacement of incumbent technologies. And the eFoy fuel cell fits an electric engine naturally perfectly well, and we show versatility with this combination. Major milestone, Gen 5 eFoy, fifth generation of eFoy introduced into the market, and funny enough, we did this even physically, launching the product at the Caravan Salon in Düsseldorf in September together with our lithium battery. We were proud And we are happy that this hybrid package consisting of the fuel cell and our own lithium-based battery, that this hybrid package now was awarded the European Innovation Award in the European camping industry. So I think if we now look at the overall environment, we simply can feel in the overall demand for our product that hydrogen and fuel cells are seen and adopted as key technologies on our way to net zero, replacing conventional technologies like diesel generators here in a broad sense in stationary and off-grid applications. I think the good thing for us is being there now for 20 years and being commercially for 15 years, we are already serving a number of industries. We have established market access there. We have solid partnerships in place, and therefore, well, we can make use of this momentum simply faster and earlier as other parties joining the club right now. So overall, on our way to net zero or a low carbon society, I think we can deliver a good piece to the puzzle. But now going to the solid numbers, I would like to ask Daniel to lead you through the set of numbers as of today.
Thank you, Peter. So what you've seen in your press release, our total revenues for the fiscal year 2020 is about 9% below last year's total revenues, mostly because of the aftermath of the second quarter, which was quite challenging with the COVID pandemic on the rise, and also at the beginning of the third quarter, where we still, you know, had to handle the challenges of the COVID pandemic. Also, and that is in line and pretty much what we also discussed in the third quarter already, the defense and security segment was the most challenging, or had to deal with the most challenging environment in the pandemic. If we look at the fourth quarter simply, we'll see that the fourth quarter total revenues are 5% below the previous year quarter, and we'll see that the positive development that we had in the clean energy mobility segment continued. We're 12.12% above in the fourth quarter compared with the fourth quarter of the previous year. And if we look at the entire year, we are pretty much 62% above the revenues from total revenues in the last year. So there's also, you know, the trend that we saw in the first three quarters regarding the segment of clean energy mobility has continued. And as Peter mentioned, you know, there are very positive impulses in there. Also, with regards to, you know, the trends continuing, applies to our oil and gas segment. Overall, as we already mentioned, you know, it has been a challenging environment in that segment. So we're 20% below last year's revenue. The same applies for the fourth quarter, pretty much also 20% below compared to the fourth quarter of 2019. Industry, you know, had a better quarter in the fourth quarter than last year. We are approximately 12% above the revenues of the fourth quarter in 2019. But still, you know, we are below on a full year basis in terms of revenue, looking at 21% below last year's total revenues. And as I mentioned before, the segment mostly impacted and affected by COVID was defense and security. The fourth quarter revenues were 18% below the fourth quarter revenues of the previous year, but still looking at the entire year, and we discussed those reasons in our third quarter results call, still we are 60% below the total revenues of last year, if we look at the full year. When it comes to the EBITDA margin, adjusted EBITDA, we're looking at 2.9 million, which translates into an EBITDA margin of 5.5%, slightly below last year, but given the challenges in the environment and what we've seen at the beginning of last year, of 2020, you know, it's better than what we initially expected. So we're looking at a 5.5% EBITDA margin versus a 6.2% adjusted EBITDA margin for 2019. EBIT adjusted is negative, 600,000 K compared to a positive EBIT adjusted in 2019, which was about 300,000, translating once again in a negative EBIT margin, adjusted EBIT margin of 1.1%. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Daniel. And now let me try to give you some more color also to the numbers on segmental level. By no means we intend to hide any of the, I'd say, call it impacts of COVID or the weaknesses shown in the pandemic environment here in the different markets we are operating in. And so let me maybe turn around or turn upside down the sequence here and start with the most challenging environment. Yeah, defense and security. Daniel has mentioned this. About 60% decline in sales compared to the year before. The key element here was the fact that as of late March and then April, May, June, we saw key markets going into really hard lockdowns, especially internationally. To mention here, India and Israel, where programs were scheduled to be executed. No doubt that this is a business that still today is supposed to land in our books, and we see activities since beginning of the year. But with a country being in a lockdown situation where you can't move from one province to another in the case of India, but also in Israel with simply a standstill as such, we had to face delays here. Overall, even also in Germany, we saw naturally a slowdown in execution. And so we, at the end, have a situation where I think we can wholeheartedly say we are unhappy with the financial performance. I think we can all, we need to acknowledge that this was external factors, and if we want to see one positive in this overall development, it is that we have not lost a single program here during this period. And what we now see since beginning of the year is, especially on the international front, movement on existing programs. We have answered tender requests already. In India, we have answered, I'd say, significant requirements, RFQs here out of Israel. But we also see a high level of activity in our European markets, including Germany. And so therefore, pretty confident to naturally coming from a very low level, but with a, let's say, with this mix of domestic and international business getting back into a significant growth path here for the year 2021. The timing, I think, is highly depending also on the development of and the easing of all the pandemic restrictions in place. But yeah, still, 15th of February, we still have we still have 10.5 months to go. So confident here. Second, business segment with an impact. Yeah, our industrial power electronics business. Q2 and Q3, we saw the expected, I'd say, reduction of call off orders by large customers, our big partners there, people like Thermo Fisher, Bosch Security Systems, as well as ASML. And we usually have a pretty long or a good visibility for half a year. And so that's why we were so confident to get back on a growth track in Q4 with a good 4 million quarter in Q4. I think we have delivered this, and I think we have all the reasons to believe that Q1 will be at least as active as Q4 2020. So what we see here is that customers have adapted to the situation. and the business models work despite corona limitations. So also here, solid growth outlook here for not only for Q1, but for the entire year. And this is naturally also part of our guidance for this year, where the range of 61 to 70 million contains growth here in all markets. Oil and gas, we were expecting the worst back in March with an oil price turning negative in April. But since August, September timeframe, stable oil price environment, overall investment activity back up, we did revise our internal scenarios here, and we ended the year here below 20% of deviation, which naturally is only a relative benchmark, but our original assessment for the year had seeing different numbers back in March and April timeframe. So oil and gas, solid end of the year. And getting back to now the positive, yeah, what is the driver for our clean energy and mobility segment? We the business proves to be extremely robust, highly pandemic resilient, and yeah, the growth here beyond 60% is, I think, is dynamic. What the good news here is, this is not driven by single project business. This goes across all geographies here that we cover. The investment of the last 10 years into partnerships across Europe, in selected countries in Asia, but also our endeavor here to expand our Canadian and North American business beyond the oil and gas industry shows results. And if we look into the applications, the classical standard EFOI applications like wind, like security and surveillance equipment, off-grid camera systems, data transfer, but also smart traffic, big step forward here in Asia, as well as new verticals like telecom backup and critical infrastructure. So a development that has not found or come to an end here with the calendar year. We are seeing same level of activity in the first couple of weeks of this year, and therefore, the positive assessment remains in place also for this year. We, at the end, see a continuously strong demand to replace incumbent technologies. And if you want to break it down to a very simple format here, internally, we have the tendency to do simplifying of messaging in here. What we call this is the goodbye diesel initiative. We are replacing conventional generators for stationary on and off-grid, means backup power, but also off-grid in a broad sense. And this, I think, is the underlying here backbone for the view on the business here, not only for 21, but also when we then discuss the midterm outlook. We are a solid replacement of a well-working technology with the distinct advantage of being sustainable. We are clean, silent and efficient, and that's why, yeah, we call this goodbye diesel. If we now go into the assessment of the outlook, the forecast 2021. We all know, and we have all seen this in our private and business lives, that Corona is not a topic of the past. We are still, let's say, in an environment where Corona is still rampant, and the environment has not had the opportunity to fully recover. But what we have taken in terms of measures in 2020, we call this Fit for the Future, which was a comprehensive set of measures implemented as of April last year, from natural cost reduction, some of it going by itself because we all could not travel anymore, but to measures of supply chain stabilization. Well, bringing some of the supply chain back to Europe, but moreover, simply having the ability of spending more money on purchasing goods helped us to continue with our operation. We had not a single day of downtime. We had no disruption in supply chain because we simply ordered double the amount of product that we needed to operate. We have done a similar thing early this year again for the first 6 to 9 months of the year. Naturally, this costs money. We see this naturally in our working capital and on the balance sheet, but we feel it's the right investment. It has helped us to have production running until Christmas with no single day of interruption. And since restarting this year after stock counting, we do the similar thing. Besides those measures in the Fit for the Future program, it was a clear focus to accelerate R&D. I mentioned it. We launched the fifth generation of eFoils late last year, but what we in parallel did is kick off the development of the next generation of hydrogen products, which is the dominant R&D program. This and next year, first prototypes on the electronics are on its way here from Holland to Germany. A good traction in the process, but we also started to evaluate complementary technologies such as electrolyzers. How does this fit in which way does this fit to our fuel cells? At the end, providing our customers finally with an on-site green hydrogen production for off-grid and backup power systems. These are programs that are in full implementation and will help us to really make good use of the positive environment. And so therefore, with, let's say, the realistic assessment of Corona impact still being there, we feel confident enough to give the guidance that is also stated in our publications today. Revenues are up to a range from 61 to 70 million. And in this context, also associated an improvement of profitability on an underlying EBITDA level from 3.5 to 6 billion and their respective EBIT numbers from minus 0.9 to 1.6 million plus. We are clear that this is naturally an assumption that does not include a severe setback in the fight against the pandemic, especially again, lockdown and shutdown measures in different countries. But overall, if we see momentum and environment, we feel it's the right time to give this confident message to the market. And naturally, this message is also a basis here for the greater picture. We took the last couple of months to assess our five-year planning, and well, if we read nowadays, it's not so much newspapers, but if we read what we can see here on any kind of electronic media, well, hydrogen and fuel cells are on top of the agenda, and some of the numbers are very, very impressive and stunning. You have consulting firms like Roland Berger here, they provided a study to one of the provincial governments here in Germany, which is freely available, where they predict here by 2030 companies to generate up to 65 billion of revenue in Europe and about the similar size in the global markets here with hydrogen and fuel cells, yeah, by 2030 already. If you take numbers of, let's say, the Hydrogen Council, where the assumption is that green hydrogen production needs to be increased by a factor of 10 until 2050, and if you then combine this with this extensive government programs, Germany 7 plus 2 million in the EU, we are talking here about 180 to 470 billion by 2050. Sometimes difficult also to keep all those huge numbers in a row here. We have revised and restated our planning, looking at the background here of the demand development. And so this accelerated growth plan that we are working on right now foresees further dynamic organic growth, but also inorganic steps like acquisitions. And we intend to, or the envisaged target number here for 2025 is a revenue range between 350 and 400 million. Again, with an increase of profitability here beyond at least 15% on EBITDA level. Besides the environment and besides, let's say, all those government projects here, I think at the end we are building or setting this on four elements. The one is an established product that is already out there as a sustainable energy source here that is replacing conventional technologies like diesel generators in different markets. We are talking, and I mentioned it before, from industrial to public to private applications. We are talking about backup power, but also off-grid power. We open up new verticals like telecommunication, but also autonomous driving, be it trains or cars. They will need a data infrastructure that is backed by a reliable backup power. And we cannot imagine that diesel generators will be the technology of choice. We are enabling here digitization, and with an existing product offering that we have here as a fuel cell pioneer, within the last 15 years we have 50,000 fuel cells sold worldwide. We have more than 100 million operating hours recorded, so we have an unprecedented and unmatched industrial experience here combined with, let's say, the technological expertise. And so we have a first mover advantage. We naturally have to make sure we can defend this and stay on top of it. So at an early stage of the market, we are one of the first companies, and in some segments, definitely still the only one capable of providing industrially proven products. Therefore, this is the basis for the organic growth in the existing markets, opening up new segments here organically. I've mentioned telecom here with our hydrogen product is the second pillar. The third pillar here of this growth path is, well, the regional expansion of the business. We have talked about this earlier today already. I think Asia, what we have now done with our partner in Japan, and we are intending to expand to other parts of Asia pretty soon, India being one of our strong home markets with a tremendous growth potential. So the regional expansion through collaboration and formally joint ventures, the third pillar. And the fourth one is definitely fitting M&A activities here. Europe as well as the U.S. are target areas where we are assessing targets, some of it already in an advanced stage. So with all of this together in a sequence and some of it also in parallel, that is simply a necessity of the environment. We cannot set our own priorities. We have to adapt to what the market now demands. Well, we feel that we are properly positioned here to benefit here disproportionately from this high momentum in the market, from this high demand here for hydrogen and methanol products. What is the plan going forward? We are now going to further detail the growth plan here. We will keep you all and the market updated on milestones. The next logical step besides, let's say, some projects being concluded and successfully ready for publication, naturally will be the March 25th publication of our annual report, where further detailing of the process is to be expected. Overall, after being in this business now for approximately 15 years, I think I'm happy to report here about an environment that we as a company have not experienced before. I think we feel that some of the investments done over the last 10 years into product and market access starts to really pay off. And therefore, well, we can only invite you to still give us your or still keep confidence with us. We will make sure we can justify your trust here by delivering on our plans. Thank you for your attention. I'm very happy to answer questions here together with my colleague Daniel Saxena. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Then we will now begin the question and answer session. If you have a question for our speakers, please dial 0 and 1 on your telephone keypad now to enter the queue. Once your name has been announced, you can ask a question. If you find your question is answered before the option to speak, you can dial 0 and 2 to cancel your question. If you're using speaker equipment today, please lift the handset before making your selection. One moment, please, for the first question. And we've received the first question. It is from Carsten von Blumenthal of First Berlin Equity Research. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Peter. Good morning, Daniel. That is a very ambitious growth plan you formulated for 2025. And that is roughly, I think, more than 7 times, perhaps, of 2020 sales. Could you figure out how much of that could be organic and how much could be by buying sales or other companies?
Absolutely. Good morning, Carsten. Thanks for being with us. Well, you know us for quite some time, and I think as an organization, we have, I'd say, proven not to be, I'd say, just overly aggressive in communication so far. I think our focus has always been to try to deliver and then demonstrate results. So also putting together this plan, we did not change our overall attitude.
Well, I can say at my age, it's also difficult to change the overall way of working. But
it is ambitious, yes. But at the same time, if we see what is happening now in the environment on the demand side, especially here for the hydrogen part of the business on the stationary side with all the investments, government, but also private side, I think you can look at the split here. We are not just saying, well, now we are buying 10 companies and this makes us a 400 million operation. There is a strong underlying organic case here with a CAGR here somewhere between 20 and 25% just for the existing part of the business, further market penetration, regional rollout, and also new segments. So more of the same new regions, but also new segments. I mentioned telecom here as one example. The other part is, and I think that's a basic difference to some of those mere M&A plans. A good, I'd say, third of this overall program here is expansion of current partnerships. We see what we do here in Asia with Toyota, expanding this to other parts of Asia and driving the business here together with an organization that is already established in these geographies requires significantly less investment. It is more, I'd say, a combination of organic growth here and some investment into potential joint venture structure. Similar thoughts here in India, where we have a legal environment that requires local content. So if we don't come on the ground and own part of an operation there, we are simply excluded from some of those massive sustainability programs that Modi has launched. Well, and then the third one, and this is, I'd say, I would say below, let's say, 100 million here is what we think acquisitive growth can add to such a plan. So it's not just, well, we are taking what we have and we buy what we don't have. It is organic growth further on the path we are on, partnerships to regionally expand, and M&A.
All right, that is very helpful. Just one question regarding the below 100 million acquisitive growth. At the moment, we have very high multiples in the sector, so all the companies out there are most of the time very, very highly priced. So don't you fear paying too much for anything out there that could be bought?
Well, if there's one good thing of being in the sector for quite some time, it's a good visibility also at targets and elements that are not yet listed and therefore maybe have different multiples on it, and just very practical. We have no intention to buy into electrolyzer valuation. There is good product out there, and we are good product. We are good in product integration. So joining forces, for example, with somebody who has already electrolyzer product, where we then integrate this with our EFOY Jupiter platform and then help this company to open up new markets, seems to us a more beneficial way forward than acquiring a stake of, I would say, 5% in a company that is pre-product and pre-revenue.
Yeah, that sounds to be the right plan. I agree on this. I would like to come back to the figures, which were basically as roughly as I expected. But if I go through the segments, what I see is that the driver, the engine of your growth last year, clean energy and mobility, was a bit weaker in Q4 than I expected, whereas industry was very strong and oil and gas was okay. Defense was also quite good in Q4, but why was clean energy and mobility relatively weak in Q4?
As you said, I think it's a luxury problem and a relative assessment to drop from 80% growth to 61% here from the nine-month figures. But there's no secret in this. It's just installation in November and December time frame here in the southern part of Germany for product was due to the harsh winter time, not at the same pace it was, let's say, August, September time frame.
Okay, so that means it swaps into 2021. That means it's just a delay, but can see strong business then as soon as this very harsh winter, indeed, I can tell you, as this goes away, which hopefully is this week.
No, we did ship the biggest part, for example, of Jupiter products already now in February for March installation. But this was not unexpected for us internally because, well, we knew they will slow down installation in the field.
All right. Looking into 2021, guidance you gave is in line with my forecasts. But if I look into the businesses, it might happen that Corona will stay longer and will be more nasty than we hope for because of the mutations, and the vaccines may not work as good as they do for the original virus. Do you think this could, again, especially be a problem in the defense and security business because governments are then more than slow to order?
Well, I think if we go back to really hard lockdown situations as we have experienced them in some of our in international markets, naturally this will have an impact. So on the lower end of the guidance, we would then have to compensate some of those delays here by civilian business, which seems at this point in time for us doable and realistic. If, let's say, we see a total return to a COVID situation like we have experienced it in March, April, and May timeframe of last year, of naturally, then we will also have to look into the figures again. But also there, we have seen customer groups really adapt to the situation. If you see our industrial electronics business in Q4 and also in Q1, we feel there's a high adoption to a new normal. Well, oil and gas, relative stability of oil price and us moving also into non-oil and gas segments to compensate for this. Well, we feel really pragmatically confident here with what we have out there. And naturally, you see it's a large range here, 61 to 70 million. And naturally, there we try to encompass some of the uncertainties associated with the COVID situation.
All right. One last question from my side. If I take the 350 million in 2025 and you have to split this between methanol fuel cells and hydrogen fuel cells, can you give us beyond the electronics business a rough idea where do you see the stronger growth and where do you see the main driver?
Yeah, the main drivers here are definitely hydrogen products, but still, let's say, above average growth here with methanol too. But this, I think, is somewhere between two-thirds, one-third, 66 to 34 to even a 70-30 ratio for the hydrogen part. But what we should not forget in this context that we are naturally talking about totally different unit prices, higher power systems fully integrated, where one EFOY is 5,000, and we are happy about this pricing and the margin associated with this, but an integrated Jupiter system here with 10 kilowatt or 5 to 10 kilowatt integrated system ranges between an 80 and 100,000. So that's why we also have a unit price effect in there.
Excellent. Very helpful, Peter. Thank you very much for taking my questions.
Well, thanks so much.
Thank you. The next question is from Anne-Margaret Crow of Edison Group. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. My first question you have partly answered anyway, because I was very interested to hear that you were considering going into the electrolyzer market. But I wondered how long it would take you to develop product for that and to catch up with incumbents such as ITM. But from what you said in your previous answer, it sounds as though you are considering acquisition as the way of getting into the electrolyzer business. Am I correct in that assumption?
Well, good morning. Thanks for helping us to clarify this point. I want to be really clear and specific here. We see good product out there already, different product concepts that we are now assessing, products that fit to the power levels or that fit to what we need as hydrogen consumption for our product. So we are talking here about the lower end in terms of production capacity of the electrolyzer market. And there are existing products out there, and our intention is to combine those existing products as part of an integrated system here with our fuel cells, with our power electronics, to have on-site green hydrogen production capability next to, call it the cabinet with the fuel cell. The next cabinet is the electrolyzer, and we are running it through all with one electronics board. So therefore, we are not intending to acquire an electrolyzer company. We are seeking collaboration here to open up new markets also for electrolyzer players. Means simply selling an electrolyzer with every, whatever, fifth or every fourth EFOY Jupiter in the long run can be a good business also for such a company. And so we do not want to reinvent the wheel, and we also don't want to buy it.
Right. That's very much clearer. Thank you for explaining that. And then my second question is looking at production capacity and to reach the revenue growth that you are planning for 2025 with your existing products or variants of those, enhancements of them, and entry into new markets, do you have enough capacity? Or will you need to invest?
Well, I think two elements to this. First of all, here in Munich, we are still, let's say, running a production that is a one-shift production. Looking at, let's say, the output here last year, about 3,500 units, rough numbers. To expand this up to almost 20,000 units, we can do this in our setup here. And talking about the regional expansion, be it here in Asia and naturally then also in North America, I think part of the value chain naturally we will transfer to those geographies, getting core modules out of the out of the German facility and then do the full integration. For instance, somewhere in Asia, I mentioned India because of the legal environment. So we will have production capacity, but more so for final assembly and module assembly, and not so much here on the stack level.
Right. That makes a lot of sense, particularly given the way in which the Indian government in particular likes companies to work. No, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Expects company to work.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
The next question is from Fabrice Disnaud of Lixer. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Peter and Daniel. I have a few questions on your sales in notably your target in 2025. Could you give a bit of information about which, obviously, the divisions we could expect to be the drivers is clean energy and mobility, but could you give us a bit more detail about which area could grow fastest? The second one is on the oil and gas business, which has been an important one for you. Would you consider sharply reducing your involvement there to really position yourself as a pure clean energy company? And the third question is about pricing pressure. We know that the fuel cell, the hydrogen chain, needs to reduce its cost sharply to broaden its scope. So do you expect prices to fall significantly in the years to come? And the last question is your growth in this year will be mostly driven by the plans launched notably by Germany or by the EU? Thank you. Sorry, that's a lot of questions.
No, Fabrice, good morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
The predominant growth driver is here the civilian fuel cell business, and there in the subsegments, I think if we see what is happening here right now in this, I'd say, telecom backup and government market, with Germany being our initial market, this is one of the key pillars. But if you also observe our publications last couple of weeks here, smart traffic with data transmission, a big element, and still we also see, say, out of the wind subsegment, significant now growth impetus, especially in Asia here, together with Toyota, where a lot of the foundation is laid already. Oil and gas, we have a natural relative decline here of the importance of this end market. To stop a business where we have introduced fuel cells as a sustainable energy source here for this industry, and where we see our customers getting even tax credits for the fact that they are replacing natural gas generators, burning the gas here with a disastrous CO2 footprint by our EFOY fuel cells. There is no plan in place right now to discontinue the business, as I think we are contributing here to simply a better CO2 footprint of an end user industry, but we are taking our strong presence in Canada as the basis to drive the non-oil and gas business in Canada, as well as soon as we can get foot on the ground again in the U.S. We expect this as of the second half of the year, and then next year being one of our most important business development areas for organic growth, the U.S., as well as judging potential acquisitions. With the new administration in place and a different view on the on reaching a climate neutral or net zero position here over time, and seeing what kind of investments the government plans here, It is one area and one market where we need to be. And coming to the price pressure, today we are still in a fortunate position with not too much and in some areas no competition. So price pressure is not a daily threat to us. But it is obvious over time with all the investments in this industry that we will see pricing pressure. And if you see also the assessment here of those five-year targets, on the profitability side, we have been cautious in a way to say the threshold here is 15% EBITDA, which implies that we are expecting price pressure over time here. But still there, I mentioned also we are working on the second generation of Jupiter fuel cells. The core target here is reduction of cost. So we target a 30 to 40% cost reduction here in this development. And naturally, this gives us, again, then liberty on pricing and still protects our margins. And why are we confident on this? We've done this for the last 10-plus years for our existing product range, taking out 60% of the bill of material overall in our EFOY platform here now with the different generations, reducing the number of cells, increasing the power levels per square centimeter, etc. So we can take our expertise here and apply it naturally also for the hydrogen products. I hope that this answers your question.
Yes. Yes, very much. Thanks a lot, Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Malte Schaumann of Warburg Research. Your line is now open. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. As you just mentioned it, just wanted also to touch on the profitability. So still, despite pricing pressure, because you still have room for cost improvement, etc., you regard the 15% margin target as conservative. This struck me that, I mean, given the operating leverage one would expect, and as the sales increases is driven by the higher margin products in your portfolio, one would expect kind of margin improvements towards 20% might not be unreasonable over the next 5 years. So what's your thought on that?
Naturally, we have discussed this internally also intensively. And maybe, I know, Daniel, you want to take a lead on this one?
Yes, most certainly. So eventually, as Peter already mentioned, we still see a lot of competition in the market as is right now, and then of course we're aware that will increase over time. At the second point, as we roll out and increasing also the numbers of our products, we do have to some extent scale effects, positive scale effects. Of course, we do not rely entirely on scale effects and margin extension based on scale, but also as Peter mentioned, we're rolling out new products, and that will be naturally, the cost of material, hopefully reducing. We are working on that. We have been working on that over the last years. If you look at our numbers and we keep on discussing that we reduce the cell count by maintaining the cell by the same energy output. So that's also one effect that will decrease our cost of material and therefore increase gross margin. And that same effect as we increase also the entire number and put it through our marketing channels, right? As we mentioned before, maintaining our sales and marketing infrastructure to serve all those markets, and provide those market access has a certain cost, and we can channel a lot more products to this market through our channels, sales channels, without necessarily increasing those sales and marketing expenses, or not increasing it at the same speed as revenue increases. Does it answer your question?
Yeah. Yep, thanks. the partnerships with local regional players, like with Toyota or maybe other names in India or whatever, these corporations in the end result in a similar comparable margin, so that we are still talking about kind of a 35 to 40% gross margin for the product then you sell via these corporations?
Yeah, for the time being, I think that's definitely what we are seeing, and this is naturally. I think then we will have one factor additionally coming in, and we've discussed this especially for the case in India with the local content, where I think especially for some of the accessory and complementary parts of the product, we should have a supporting element to it, even helping us to maintain margins here.
Yeah, so that area does not at least not significantly dilute your margins over time.
No, we are not expecting this. No.
Good. Okay, and then if the 20-25% CAGR for the organic sales, that excludes all the potential corporations and the one with Toyota in Japan, Toyota Tsusho, and then the other ones that are to follow, right? So these come fully on top.
Yeah, we on purpose we split this in our planning here, and we did a bottom-up planning really based on current customer base, current product, and going forward roadmap, etc. And then the second part, as mentioned before here, for the partnerships, and the third one, and I would say almost the smallest one, is the direct M&A.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, so if my calculation is right, then the kind of corporations should then add kind of 100, very rough number, kind of 150, 130, 150, 160 million sales then by 2025.
I think here we can go by what we see in our discussions here. With the largest party we are discussing here, for them, a threshold of 100 million, I think, is kind of the minimum threshold they need to justify investments into a project. And so, therefore, I think it's a realistic basis here.
Yeah. I mean, that actually was my question. What gives you the confidence, and what are the main building blocks across different parties you see in the talk? So that kind of discussion, I mean, obviously gives some kind of visibility then.
Yes.
Which should be doable. Okay, that's it for the moment. Thanks.
Just one comment on the profitability side. I think if we look at the 2025 scenario, the revenue level, we feel it shows confidence or from confident to aggressive. And on the profitability side, I think we are confident, and we're going into the program where we then have to see how aggressive we can be on this side. I think this will be an iterative process here.
Yep, makes sense. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would like to come back to you.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks, everyone, joining us today. We thank for your interest, attention, and your trust. And as always, please don't hesitate to get back to us, Daniel or myself or Susan, with direct questions for interaction. Have a great day, and thanks again.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your attendance. This call has been concluded. You may disconnect.